This is GamesAtWork.biz with your hosts, Phaedra Boynodiris, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization with which we have been, are, or may be affiliated.
This is episode 49, Crowdsourcing and Crowdfunding, and was recorded Friday the 14th, June 2013.
And welcome to another episode of GamesAtWork.biz. It is a lovely, lovely Friday morning here in sunny Raleigh, North Carolina. And I am Phaedra Boynodiris, and I'm joined here by my lovely, rather handsome co-host, Michael Martin, and talented co-host Michael Martin, hailing from Hungary. How you doing, Mike?
It's a beautiful afternoon here in Budapest, and we are seeing nearly Carolina blue skies. It's kind of tinged with white here, too, so we're getting to the end of the day here, as you are in the beginning part of your day there, but we're going to have a fun show for everyone today. It won't be as much coffee-induced, I think, as last time, and we'll miss Michael, unfortunately. But we've got some fun topics that we found for our listeners, you, our listeners. Let's get right to
it, for those who missed the last show,
and go back and listen.
He's talking about caffeine-induced craziness. We saw our other colleague, Michael Rowe, put away a six-shot espresso drink like it was water. I've never seen anything like that. He's a machine, a machine.
And he got a little feisty, too.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
I think that's his normal state. I don't know.
So the first of the links, that Phaedra, that you found for us here, and I love this story. I mean, how fun is this? Is a fantasy to reality story about a guy named, and this is going to be a really tricky name because he's from Azerbaijan, Vugar Huzinzade, or something like this, Huzinzade. And this guy, the fun thing about him is he liked to play a game called Football Manager. And apparently it trained him so well that he became a football manager.
A story. I love this story mainly because when you think about the likelihood of someone playing a game that can lead them to a career, the one single thing that really pops in my head typically is defense. Like, you know, you're able to shoot in a first-person shooter, or you're able to manage or manipulate drone airplanes. And this one, you know, just the idea of being able to use a strategy game to manage and optimize a football team. I love this story.
I do too. I mean, it was the virtual worlds, you know, for the U.S. Army that kind of got me kicked off on this from an episode of the Screensavers eons ago. And you're right. That's the gateway, you would think. But for this particular individual, and Football Manager, again, for our non-European friends, we're talking about European football, not about American football. Mm-hmm. That this particular game, and I've not played this game before. It's a Sega game, I understand. You take charge of managing a what the U.S. folks would call a soccer team, and you have to do all kinds of simulations based on that. I mean, that's almost like saying, "Well, I play Railroad Tycoon, so how about it if I run Amtrak?" And that's what I guess what surprised so many people. This was November of last year is when this actually happened for this particular guy.
And like I said, I do love the story, but it has gotten me thinking, like, what's next? What's the next place where people are just going to be noticed by industry from what they do within games and plucked out and be said, you know, okay, you did so well in SimCity as an urban planner. We're going to have you run Boston for us. What do you think?
I like it. I mean, let's imagine a few of those things. I mean, one would be really cool to imagine is surgery. Not that you really want to trust yourself to the 14-year-old who has mastered a virtual surgeon 47++++, but couldn't it be interesting for applicants to med school, for example, to have succeeded in, you know, neurosurgery, plastic surgery, vascular reconstruction surgery that happened to be a game? Maybe.
Another thought to this is this means, I mean, if this took off with the whole football manager idea, and we've talked already about defense, that there's a significant amount of analytics gathering that would need to be done, right? Mm-hmm. That this person playing this game with these kinds of stressors managed to get this kind of score, you know, so, and that would need to be transparent to potential hiring companies. So that's also a difference in terms of the kinds of technology that would be required to support these kinds of games, as well as privacy.
I'm reminded, I'm trying to find the article now, and I'll look for it maybe a little bit later. There was an article in the News and Observer yesterday, the Raleigh News and Observer yesterday, the day before, that was highlighting an NC State graduate that took analytics around the prevalence of linguistics in the United States to show where in the United States people said soda, where in the United States people said pop, where in the United States people said Coke, which are all functionally equivalent, the same thing, depending upon where you are, and then overlay that on a map.
Yep.
Right. So that was, you know, and got a lot of press and notoriety as a result of it. Although what was funny, too, is that the analytics, the underlying analytics were compiled, I think, you know, years ago. I mean, this wasn't like, you know, yesterday. It was just that this guy said, hey, you know what? I put it on a map. Isn't that cool?
Right. Right. Yeah, I think that it's very interesting. And it would be very interesting to see, are there pockets in different geographies? Are there pockets in terms of what the background is of these players and who plays better? I mean, there's all kinds of things we could learn from people's gameplay. And then how is it that you funnel them into careers which might be better matches for them than others?
Sort of a universally adaptable game that morphs to you. Right. That discovers your learning style, discovers the strengths and talents that you have, the way you organize things. And then as it morphs, it presents you with challenges that then say, OK, well, now the what color is your iPad kind of a game that says, here's what career you ought to be following.
Agreed.
Ooh, that's kind of cool. You know, another thing I think could be kind of neat is there's so many of the Civilization, you know, so think of Railroad Tycoon again, Civilization, SimCity, you know, very intensive games that require juggling a multitude of interacting aspects, that those games might be interesting to notice too, and I think are furthermore interesting to understand how you can break down a large task into smaller tasks that might be fun to play, but then that the smaller task can be re-aggregated back in terms of the final or the bigger output that's a real business problem or a real social problem that has to be addressed.
So what you're now talking about is crowdsourcing and trying to solve big, complex problems, potentially even unbeknownst to the player themselves.
Yes, yes. And this is a recurring theme for us. I mean, it's something I think is eminently doable. The trick is, how do you take the big problem and slice it into bits so that, A, you get the work done for free and for fun? And then
agreed.
B, you can reaggregate it and then make something of use out of it.
Mm-hmm. And this is, I mean, I don't think this is a small endeavor. This would be significant. And I don't think it's the panacea for all kinds of problems. It would need to be problems that could be divvied up in that fashion. But also that when you look at the individual slice, it's contained unto its own. It's its own, right, world. It's its own game. You don't need to know about the other slivers out there necessarily to be able to play.
Right, right. And you had introduced me, I think, to Folded and a couple of games like that already some
Eterna.
Time ago. Yeah.
Right.
Where you could theoretically take lots of problems and put it into those kind of molds, you know, virtual 3D Tetris-y kind of things, where whatever you're trying to make fit the puzzle could be, you know, disaggregated from whatever it is and have people work to solve to fit the puzzle in a way that a bulldozer machine attempt to fill fit the gap and fill in the puzzle would take potentially years to go, the human brain can visually, spatially do.
And the difference is that, in essence, how is it that you can use metaphor as a means to translate what the problem is? Because, you know, at some point you don't need to be all in the nitty gritty detail of a problem in order to lend some real value towards a solution. You know, what's the level of metaphor that you can raise a problem to so that you could give it to more people to, in essence, start crowdsourcing components of a solution? And that's, I mean, I'm not saying it's an easy feat. In fact, that's quite challenging. But man, when you can get that secret sauce right, you can get some serious ROI out of it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm thinking a lot about the Google game now that's available on Android, and that name is escaping me now for a second too. But that particular game where you're building nodes, you're building emitters, you're one of two factions, and you're kind of competing against one another. There could be some really, really interesting things as Google could take advantage of that, plus their new acquisition, which we've also talked about plenty of times here before, Waze. To further gamify the mapping, the traffic, a variety of other things that could be even more fun to encourage people to do that as opposed to something else.
Agreed. And speaking of Google, Google has recently hired one of the mavens within the gaming industry, you know, someone who had been at Activision for many years. I mean, his whole career, decades worth within the video gaming industry, Noah Falstein as their senior game designer. So it's going to be very interesting to see what Google does in this space.
I can't wait. And they've got the space and the opportunity to go do just that. And when you combine that with Google Glass, now you've got the next, you know, big steps that you can really do something very, very interesting, very, very immersive, very ARG-ish.
Agreed. A fun space to watch. Watch this space.
Yeah, Ingress. Ingress is the name of the game.
So. Ah.
Which unfortunately doesn't work on my hardware device. So, you know, there you go.
Okay.
So all of these stories roll nicely into the second link that you'd shared as well. And this was the Internet Response League. You know, I'm imagining the Hall of Internet Justice, you know, kind of coming up with a little pool out in front. I love this. So the concept here, the vision says, they believe that online gamers can play a significant role in supporting disaster response operations worldwide. What were your initial thoughts on this crowd here, Phaedra?
Oh, my initial thoughts were, this is awesome. I love, love, love the idea because, in essence, you know, back to crowdsourcing, what you're doing is you're stress testing different processes associated with disaster response. You've got a virtual world environment. I'm not talking about Second Life. At this point, they were talking about World of Warcraft as an example world environment to play in. But in essence, stress testing, if XYZ disaster happens, we've got these kinds of resources on the ground. How do we as a team best interact as a means to ensure we reach certain goals, whether that's saving lives, whether that's saving resources, whatever the case might be? I love it. I think it's well overdue.
I think so too. And having it be an organized effort is, I think, a huge plus too. I was looking for the reference point of, because we've had a number of these before, of just like looking for someone, looking for a lost boat on the ocean, right? So there's been a big storm. You know that a boat was within, you know, this certain number of square miles. Planes are flying overhead. And you could divvy up the amount of pictures that those planes are taking and parse them out to gamers who could apply the human eye, which sometimes will discover things that, a computer bulldozer model may not find quickly, to discover the location of that lost vessel and get mm-hmm. the search and rescue teams to them faster. Leveraging also these gargantuan install bases of however, you know, many people are logged into World of Warcraft or Facebook or any variety of solutions at a time, allows you to put out the virtual Amber Alert kind of thing a whole lot faster than you could have otherwise
true.
Do.
This is very true. And speaking of virtual Amber Alerts, do you remember several years ago when they introduced a virtual plague in the World of Warcraft in the land of Azeroth?
Yes.
And it was very interesting to see, you know, how people were quarantining themselves so that they wouldn't get infected. And how is it that, in essence, the way that people were interacting within this virtual world affected the spread of the disease? And I mean, this is yet again a perfect example of what we can learn from these kinds of gaming experiences that would be able to help us with in real life.
Right, because that will allow some modeling for a reality that what might happen, right? You know, are people diving for the nearest cave and barricading the door?
Right.
What are they doing?
Exactly.
I also like the article, or not the article, but the website and the reward structure that they talked about there, because it was very reminiscent of what we were describing just last week and talking about airline rewards and the like, where in World of Warcraft, there might be a special mount that's only available to those people who contribute a certain whatever to a particular relief effort. And it becomes street cred. It becomes something special that you have and you wouldn't have gotten otherwise. And the compensation, if you will, what I like about it is it's not money, right? It's something that's obtainable but difficult to get. Right. So we're on the story of the value of virtual goods, right? You want things that are not freely available. You can't copy them and make a million copies of them really easily. But you want to have a reward for people doing what your behavior you're trying to incent. So I like that a lot. And I like the idea of crowds then organizing together, which is one of the things that World of Warcraft is really good about. So if you could establish a quest or a mission or a raid party that was designed to do something positive in real life, you know, leveraging the in-world stores, for example, you might determine that, hey, you know what, I'm going to donate, you know, 70,000 gold to this particular cause. And in many of these worlds, too, that those dollars are or coins are convertible to real currency. That would be another interesting angle. Instead of saying text this number and you will donate something to the Red Cross, World of Warcraft could say donate this amount of gold, we will give this favorable exchange rate, or we'll match it or whatever. And now all of a sudden you've got yet another mechanism for people to be altruistic through the game engines.
I think you're absolutely right. Yet another channel, yet another means to be able to visualize and collaborate and motivate people to do something good.
Yeah, I let me see if I can find it here quickly, because I saw the amount of money that was donated for a couple of examples of disasters was really, really, really high from players. Yeah, here it is. Humanitarian-oriented player base for World of Warcraft. Players donated $1.9 million for the Japan earthquake relief and $2.3 million for Superstorm Sandy.
Huh.
So, you know, so these were...
That's significant.
These were pretty big, you know, donations that came out from here. And this particular Internet Response League also was talking about the same idea of, you know, breaking down into chunks like we were describing earlier. You know, obviously my thinking is very much aligned to this too. How do you get through large quantities, you know, big data by leveraging the wet human grid of players that are on the games?
Speaking of which, you mentioned big data and solving big problems, in this case, disaster response. And we've talked many times about what it would take to integrate real data and real processes within some of these gaming environments, right?
Yes.
And this isn't a small feat. It's not a cheap feat. It's not, you know, a 6-month project. It's not even a year project to be able to pull this off. For example, with what this IRL group is doing with the real data is not insignificant. But yet, there would be many, 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 many organizations, municipalities, governments that could really benefit from something like this, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So this brings me to my next topic, which is, in essence, you know, we've seen trends on for crowdfunding of big projects, whether it's the creation of indie movies or whether it's the creation of a brand new bracelet or a new watch, whatever it is. You know, Kickstarter is a great example of how
Indiegogo,
you know, an application. Yeah. Yeah, an application has been built to facilitate getting co-investors to the table. Right, right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So for some of these bigger, serious games that can benefit across organizations, why aren't we seeing more crowdfunded opportunities? For example, schools, right? Games to teach at schools. All of these schools would be interested in certified games, you know, that have physics content in them or that teach STEM, or, you know, defense games that help to collectively optimize mission strategy. Why do you think we're not seeing more crowdfunded projects happening today?
Ooh, that's a fantastic question. I think that the start is that the vision has to be explained in a compelling way. So we've talked about Dragon Box as an example on the show here before, which kind of tricks kids into learning algebra before perhaps they're even ready to understand it from standard book learning, right? So the way Dragon Box works is that you've got a dragon box that needs to be all by itself on one side of the screen, and there's a divider, and on the other side of the screen, there's going to be other things. It might be a little dragon, it might be a little worm, it might be a slug, and your problem that's presented to you might be, you know, a slug and the dragon box, and on the other side of the equation, it's a snake. And the way you solve for that is you have to put a minus slug, a negative slug, a night slug on the left-hand side and the right-hand side. So you're balancing the equation. You're getting the slug off of the left-hand side so the dragon box is by itself. You're putting it on the right-hand side, and now you've solved the problem, and it's happy, and you get a little, you know, endorphin, you know, kick for the nice little graphics they show. So to answer your question, I think that for games like Dragon Box, there are probably developers out there saying, yeah, you know what, Fader, you're exactly right. This is exactly the market that we're after. I think from a Kickstarter, Indiegogo, blah, 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 we probably just haven't had the compelling enough vision to say, here's what the art of the possible is. You know, if you school system, you know, XYZ can pony up $100 a piece, you know, as an individual initial backer, we're going to give you, you know, 12 copies of the software, you know, something, you know, just like that. And then these could take off and the brand could be created and you could spin up, you know, a viable concern that could do money more of them. I think that's probably what it is. Are people looking for it? Are they marketed properly? Are they going to the appropriate educational conferences and the like? I mean, it's summertime now. This is the perfect time for, you know, an intrepid person to say, here's our possibilities. This is what we could do if we had the funding to go build it.
I think you're right. I also think that the kinds of serious games projects that would be put on like a Kickstarter or one of these crowdfunding sites would need to have really set scope. Because if you've got multiple co-investors, which in essence would be like multiple cooks in the kitchen who are trying to control the vision, you could have some trouble. And I think maybe that might be another reason why it hasn't really taken off. You know, just thinking about defense as an example, maybe there's this concern about, well, you know, if, you know, five countries invest in X project, you know, are we going to be able to agree on the same vision for this product or not? Although, you know, thinking about the way that budgets are strapped today, I don't see how anybody can afford to have their own unique vision anymore. You know, how can anybody afford to say, well, my version of this project needs to have X in it without agreeing amongst all the other co-investors? So maybe this hurdle is going to go away just because, you know, people's budgets can't stretch to support it anymore.
Well, maybe. On the flip side, I think that many of these Kickstarter and other programs are designed with the vision of the creator, and they're not intended to be dynamic, right? They're not saying, vote on these six things and you tell me what you think's most important. There's the inventor or the creator saying, this is what I'm going to do. If you give me some money, you know, and if you give me enough money, I will come to your house and I will cook you dinner, right? And hand deliver a signed copy of the CD with the stuff on it or whatever. Yep. And so they're not necessarily entertaining requirements as much as they're saying, here's my vision. This is what I'm supporting. If you're on board, let's go.
Yeah. Yeah, I see great opportunity with some of these games that you and I have been talking about, Michael, to get them crowdfunded. Because again, I'm seeing more and more and more need for some of the same exact models across multiple different organizations. And there's a decent sized price tag associated with one of these. So why not gather a group of co-investors to pitch in and actually create something big that can be used across organization? I think this is going to happen. It's going to happen. Watch this space.
Well, it has to. It has to. I had the same concept with municipalities, town, city, state governments, that when you think about it, so many of those are common. The needs are common across the entire United States, and probably you can expand that to be the world. That if you could just do the thing you need to once, it could be much more cost effective than everybody rolling their own.
And I also think that this business model of co-investing, right, also lends to another idea that we've spoken about on the show before, which is the gaming as a service or simulations as a service, a cloud-hosted base platform for a particular kind of game. And then when your organization wants to customize it or tweak it for a particular need, that's when you give micropayments. Right. So you've got co-investors investing in a base product. But then when you want to have something tweaked for you, this is what you pay. Or when you want to introduce a unique stream of real data, you pay. When you want to showcase your particular process, you pay.
And I've seen several examples of it's not bug tracking, it's really requirements, user requirement definitions, where those become crowdfunded, crowdsourced, crowd voted. So that if you find that for this cloud, this game as a service structure, you really need some certain feature, you articulate it and describe it as a user, and other users sign on and they vote for it, or they don't.
Agreed. Agreed.
And then there could be a cost model that's associated with it that says, well, I think it's so important, I'm willing to put $1,000 on it to go get this feature. And other people are like, I think that's the silliest thing since, no, not going to spend a dime on it. And if it doesn't reach the threshold, it doesn't happen.
Right, right. Agreed. I concur. There's many opportunities with leveraging social media tools to figure out what's the right recs and what are the right kinds of investments to make.
So continuing that thread a little further, I can envision where the micro investments and the crowdsourcing could not be limited to just dollars. They could be investment in terms of time, assets, reusable code modules, donated testing time. I mean, there's a variety of ways that you could say, look, I care enough about this, I will sign up to be a user tester. Right. I've logged this bug, and when the bug gets fixed, I care about it so much, please let me know. I will user test this for you and give you feedback. And that's a value in and of itself, for someone.
Very much so. The volunteer aspect. If you care, you may not have the money to sink into it, but if you care enough, if you want to see this for your school, for your organization, for your charity, for your city, you can say, I'm going to donate my time to make sure that this happens. And here's what I can do. I like this idea. I like this idea a lot. For some of these bigger gaming projects, I think this could be a winner.
Yeah, and beta testing has always been a fun thing. I had a chance to do some of that a long time ago for MicroProse. They had a they were in the Europa Center in Chapel Hill. They actually had offices there, and somehow or another, they contacted me, and I roped in a couple of my friends, and we got a chance to do some beta testing and of some new game that they were cooking up, and it was a lot of fun. And we got a little bit of money that I immediately blew on a gaming joystick because I felt right to spend the money I got for a game on a gaming joystick. But it was fun. It was just really cool to be able to be asked and asked opinions and to contribute. And I liked it. I thought that was great fun. That was a long time ago, though. That was, 15, 20 years ago, probably.
Hey, you don't look a day older.
Hey, it is nice to see you, though. I think that, the video call here adds an extra dimension, too, to make sure that we're engaged and really talking.
It does. We should do this again. I like the video. Well, I had so much fun with the face-to-face in the coffee shop. By the way, so I have no power in my house today because we had a very bad storm in Raleigh last night. Ooh. But the thought of dragging my microphone to do a podcast in a coffee shop alone I was too chicken, way too chicken to do that. So I'm at a friend's house instead. I can only do it with you guys, you know, in person.
Well,
so
Michael may do that. Michael may do that again. I think it'd be a lot of fun, you know, once I'm back from my assignment, that we try to do a regular coffee recording. You know, maybe we get like once a month at least. And
I would love that. We'll do it at Bean Traders again. It's a plan.
It's Bean Traders. Yeah, Bean Traders is your source for coffee. So if you are in the Durham area, you need to look them up. They're awesome. All right. Well, I think that puts us at about time for today. So we want to encourage all kinds of feedback. We've got a multitude of channels. We've got a Tumblr blog, too, that Michael worked on this past week. So that's kind of fun. You can see the little dances with Wookie Wookie out there. We've got Google+, where we put some fun pictures on from time to time, and sometimes even more frequently than that. Facebook is out there. Of course, there's the gamesatwork.biz website. you can see us on Twitter. You can see Fader on Twitter at
Innovate. That's with the number 8. Innovate Game. That's it.
And you can find me at Carolina Big Blue and Michael at MichaelRowe01. To see what we're tweeting about from our various perspectives and geolocations.
Yes.
So thanks, everyone, for your thoughts, your feedback, and we're looking forward to being back, hopefully full strength again, next week.
It's been fun. Peace out.
See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.